At 110 on WGN, a pleasant Saturday afternoon to you, everybody. John Hanson here, take you till 3 o'clock, and you just heard a new name there in our intro, at least new to us here at WGN and our listeners. It's Don McGarrah. He's from MacCreedyLaw.com. Don, a pleasure to meet you. How you doing today?
Well, I'm doing fine. Thanks for having me. I very much appreciate this.
You're here on WGN today. You got an extensive history, but let's go back. Why did you want to become a lawyer?
Well, I don't... I told you this right before we started. I really didn't want to become a lawyer. I was interested in going into broadcasts, and I actually broadcast radio for 2 years in college. But someone suggested that I take the LSAT because the entry-level positions, you know, in communications would be a little higher level if you go in as a lawyer. I did. I did very well on the LSAT. I went to law school, and then a buddy of mine was working for a trial firm in St. Louis. And I got a job there because I needed to work part-time while I was going to school and got the bug. And then I was told, and this is good advice, if you're going to do trial work, do it in the beginning of your career, because if you go into corporate law 10 years later, you're not going to go back to trial work.
Mm-hmm.
So I've been doing it ever since. And I've had some very, very good experiences, very good mentoring.
And you've done it for a long time all over the country.
I have. I was with a firm here in Chicago called the Wildman Herald Firm. They're no longer in existence. They've got great lawyers spread around in some other firms. It was just subsumed by another firm. But at that firm and then the firm after, I've done work in 38 different states as lead trial counsel.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
You're kind of a journeyman through your whole life in many ways.
Indeed.
As a son of a rear admiral in the in the Navy,
yes,
you
sir.
Moved around as a kid a lot, didn't you?
We moved around every 2 to 3 years, and I was very, my dad's been gone sadly a long time, but he was a great guy, very humble, but I would also tip my cap to my mom, who we lost about a year ago. She had a wonderful life. She was 94, but she was basically the COO of our family. Every 2 years, you know, because you'd have to organize the furniture, you'd have to make a list of things. Plus, she had 3 boys to deal with, one of whom was a dunderhead right here, you know. So I was very proud of and am still very proud of both my parents.
Yeah, well, that's wonderful.
Yeah.
And you live in the western burbs here in the area?
I do. I live out there with my wife, Mary, and we have 3 grown daughters. 2 are down in Georgia, which shows signs of human intelligence during the middle of the winter. And and one is here in Chicago. Yeah, one's in Athens, one's in Atlanta, and one's here in Chicago.
And you are in, what would you categorize your area of law? Because, you know, personal injury umbrella is big. Some people have negative connotations of what personal injury is.
Right.
They think it's a bunch of the billboard lawyers that are chasing after trying to get some money. But personal injury lawyers or product liability, all these sorts of things,
well,
you are helping people often on their worst days.
Yeah. The firm that MacCreedy Law does plaintiff's work, meaning we represent people who have been injured. So we are plaintiff's personal injury lawyers. I handle the biggest cases and the most complex cases. That can involve medical malpractice cases, product liability cases. It can involve, you know, motor vehicle or trucking cases, but they're the more complex ones. I also do what's called property subrogation when you have a multi-million dollar property loss. And so that's similar to product liability. But in all of these cases, basically what you're trying to do is to figure out what happened and why. Some of them are a lot more complex, so you get into a lot more detailed analysis with a lot of different experts. Some of them are relatively simple, but that's basically what we do. And we've got, I think we've got 175 people now. We've got explosive growth. We're in 5 states. We're going to open up in 2 more states, and that's why Michael MacCreedy, who's a wonderful guy, he's the founder, and I talked for a couple of months last year, and I came over and joined the firm.
Yeah. Do you like it when it's more complex, the cases?
I do, because you learn a lot about a lot of different areas. You typically have to bring in experts. Those are people, and we like to get top drawer experts, who are people who are at the top of their field, and then you learn. You learn about if I've got a commercial case involving some sort of big commercial dispute, I bring in a forensic accountant, then I learn about how to get into the documents and figure out what's really going on. A fire case, you bring in cause and origin experts, you figure out what burn powders, patterns are, whether or not there was an accelerant, you know, where it started, why. I've handled tons of firearms cases, and so I've dealt with a lot of firearms and tool marks examiners, and I've also dealt with reconstruction of those things. It's fascinating.
Wow, you're almost like a lead detective in a criminal case almost. Right. I know this is civil, but you're kind of leading the way in a journey of discovery.
Well, you know, in some of the firearms cases, and I've done both, I've done more defense work than plaintiff's work. Wildman, for a while, we represented more firearms manufacturers than any law firm, not in the United States, in the world. And so for several of those companies, that's why I was going all around the country. And when I say I was on a team, we had a great group of lawyers. But you did go in and figure out what was going on. And our investigators were retired FBI agents. And we had really, really good people. And actually, two of the cases, we figured out it was not an accidental discharge.
Wow.
It was it was reported as an accidental discharge, but both of them were murders.
So, wow.
Yeah, it was fascinating.
So what sorts of, do you have any examples of any products or cases that you really stand out to you is that you can kind of like just walk us through the nuts and bolts of that? You can give a breadth of the idea of what people should be looking out for?
In product liability, let me just give you an example. I was thinking about this a little before we started. Let's say you're out on a highway and you had your car serviced 30 days ago and your brakes fail and you get into a very serious accident and you sustain serious injuries. We want to right away make sure that that car is preserved because we want to have someone who knows what they're doing go look at it. That could involve a product liability issue, meaning in product liability, you either have a design defect, which means that there's something about the design that's inherently dangerous. You have a manufacturing defect, which is the easiest case for a plaintiff to prove. That means you have a good design, but for whatever reason, maybe the materials were off or there was a bad day during the process. And then you have warnings defects. In a circumstance like that, I want to find out whether or not there's a problem with the design of the brake pads, the function of the brake pads. I want to see whether or not the components are manufactured properly. I want to see whether or not the warnings and instructions in the manual are appropriate. But I also want to see, since you had it serviced 30 days before, I want to see whether the service technicians were responsible for that. So, and I can tell you without equivocation, the people who do product liability defense in the Chicagoland area, there's a lot of great lawyers here on both sides of the street. And that's one thing about Chicago. The bar here is very strong, the trial bar. And so if you're getting into that game, you better know what you're doing or you better have good training. So that's the kind of thing that you get into. Yeah, I mean, what happened and why? But now we've got four or five possibilities.
Yeah.
I'm not the expert, you know, and I handle medical cases. But I tell people I know enough medicine to be dangerous. when I have a medical case, I bring in the experts.
So that's interesting on the brake case, as an example, because not only are obviously you fighting to get something that, let's say there was a death or an injury in that case, failed brakes, you're trying to help that family get what's due to them and make themselves whole in the only way our legal system knows how to, and that's financially.
Right.
But then, extrapolating from that, if there is something wrong with the manufacturing or the servicing,
right,
this is now an issue that could broadly affect more people, right?
Oh, I mean, absolutely.
Is that what drives you, is that it's not only about finding justice for someone that was hurt or killed and finding justice for their family, but also to kind of be a check on these companies to make sure that this doesn't happen again?
Absolutely. And quite frankly, product liability is an area where you can take a look at that and see what was going on in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Versus now, there's not as many product liability cases because in part, not exclusively, but in part because the tort system worked. There was a case, and I should know the date, I believe it was in the 1970s. One of the major manufacturers of an automobile, and I will not mention the name.
That's fine.
But it was a small car, and it was designed with the gas tank placement behind the rear axle. That means if someone had a 10-mile-an-hour rear-end collision, the gas tank could puncture. If it punctures, it could explode, and they had some horrific circumstances. That was changed. There was a big case out in Los Angeles, and I think the company was hit for $105 million. If you extrapolate that to today's dollars, that would probably be $500 or $600 million.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's something that you know, we're very proud of in terms of being able to help those things, not only the current case but other cases. But I've also found in terms of, you know, I've done both plaintiffs and defense work, they're good, reasonable, and responsible manufacturers want to know about that. Because if there's something out in the field and they're doing the right thing, they want to fix it.
Yeah.
You know, and if they don't, they're going to be held accountable. And that's one of the things that we serve. And quite frankly, I've got several stories, and I have a hard time talking about some of them because it brings a tear to my eye, quite literally. But there are things where families have been so, you know, grateful that we've been able to help them out. And when I say we, I'm talking about the firm.
Yeah. The firm is McCready Law, M-C McCready. I'm going to spell it out for people on the website, mccreadylaw.com.
Yes, sir.
The number is 773-917-1276. 773-917-1276. I'll give that number a couple more times here throughout this hour. And the name of the gentleman we're chatting with is Don McGarrah, who has a lot of experience in this stuff. Someone actually texted in immediately. You mentioned medical malpractice.
Uh-huh.
Do you do things about misdiagnoses? Is that a world in which you operate too?
Sure.
Or is that a really hard area to go after, maybe a doctor who misdiagnosed someone?
Well, I mean, there's a couple of points to be made in terms of Med-Mal. Most of the, and I'll reiterate what I said about Chicago, the medical care in Chicago is extraordinary in terms of the different facilities that we have.
Yeah.
But like in any industry, people make mistakes, and on occasion you have some who shouldn't be practicing medicine. But you can have cases where you have a misdiagnosis. Now, in the medical malpractice arena, you have to, as a plaintiff, you've got the burden of proof on any of these cases. But you have to show what the standard of care is, which is what would a reasonably careful physician do under the same or similar circumstance. You have to show that there's been a violation or deviation from the standard of care, meaning the medical care provider did something they shouldn't have done or didn't do something they should have done. And then you have to show that that deviation was a proximate cause of the claim damages. So we've got an excellent defense Med-Mal bar here. And, you know, in terms of the experts, the defense is going to get very formidable experts as well, as you can imagine. So we've got to figure out whether or not from a liability standpoint we can prove our case and a causation standpoint. A lot of times you'll have a circumstance where a doctor will go in and perform, for instance, a very complex neurosurgical procedure or spine, you know, procedure, and they'll use extraordinary care and they'll do a great job, and you end up with a bad result.
Right.
And that's simply because of the patient's reaction, the underlying physiology, the condition, whatever. So, you know, the other thing is in the good firms, in terms of handling this kind of work for plaintiffs, you have to be very careful because you're talking about spending between $100,000 and $300,000 by the time you get to trial. You're talking about spending several hundred hours. You're talking about...
And this is the firm spending the money.
This is the firm spending the money, yes. And then it takes you 2 to 3 years to get to trial.
Right.
So, yes, misdiagnoses happen. But like I said a few minutes ago, you have to figure out what happened and why. And so what you look at is what was available to the physician to diagnose this condition. And what is typically done? Are you talking about imaging studies? Are you talking about blood work? Are you talking about, you know, examination? In most cases, it's a combination of all of those things.
Does intent ever play a role in any of these cases? Do you have to prove any sort of malicious intent, or does it just have to be the burden of this person, whether it's medical malpractice, product liability, this person, this company, or any reasonable company should have known that this could have been defective or could have been a misdiagnosis?
Most of the time you don't have intentional issues in medicine. Most of it's you're talking about negligence. Someone's made a mistake in some form or fashion. Now, that's not absolutely true because there are some outliers. There was that famous case down in Texas where a nurse was, you know, causing the death of a number of her patients.
Right.
And there was litigation over that.
That's rare, though, yeah. It's usually negligence.
It's usually negligence. And the case I was telling you about, though, years ago in California, most of that verdict, that $100 million-plus verdict, was punitive damages. And punitive damages are awarded, and you have to prove, you have to establish what's called an evidentiary foundation, and then if the court's satisfied, the theory behind punitive damages is to punish and deter. You punish the wrongdoer and you deter future misconduct. So in that case, they had internal documentation where they were assessing whether or not it would be more cost effective to go to litigation versus fixing the problem.
Well, that's no good.
Yeah, and that's what we call aggravated circumstances. And, you know, if you're trying a case, there's another thing, and I'm not trying to demean this or belittle it, because everyone who's tried a lot of cases has seen these circumstances, and that's when you get into what I call RI, a little righteous indignation, because you've got someone who's not only, it's not someone who's just been, you know, negligent or careless, it's someone who's done something reckless or inappropriate or willful and wanton. So yeah, you have a higher level of damages. It thankfully doesn't happen most of the time, but if you have an intentional shooting, you can sue that person,
Yeah. And
that would be, they will be subjected, hopefully, to criminal prosecution.
Right.
But you can also sue them, and if you sue them and they have assets, you can get after them.
All right. We got to take a break here, and then we got the news coming up. 708 followed up with a question about medical malpractice, about statute of limitations. We'll get that answer after the break.
Sure.
And the news, because that's often at play as well. One more time, it's McGreedyLaw.com. McCready Law, excuse me, not G. It's Don McGarra. Too many G's and C's
right here. Indeed.
And mix all over the place. So McCready Law, Don McGarra, And the number 773-917-1276. Let's take a break. We'll be right back, and then we'll have the news on WGN. 135 on WGN. Let's Get Legal, powered by the Illinois State Bar Association. By the way, I meant to shout out in our first half hour how awesome it is what Hochberg and so many people have been doing to try and make sure that our police officers here in Chicago get the vests and not have to pay for them, the bulletproof vests that save their lives. In many cases, they're issued one when they start, if I'm understanding correctly, over the years of Hochberg's involvement with this. But when they have to replace their own vests, they've got to pony up $500 per vest. And there's other equipment, other uniform expenses. And as you can imagine, those costs add up quickly. It's got to be one of the toughest jobs out there. It always has been, but even more amplified these days. So $500 per vest to save their lives. That's frankly kind of ridiculous, honestly. But the Chicago Police Memorial Foundation has distributed over 15,000 replacement vests to Chicago police officers over the years. And I talked to David between our shows, and I think he said they had gotten $65,000 already donated during the vest-a-thon today. That's 130 vests, if my math is correct, I think. And you can still donate. cpdvest.com is where you go. The phone number is, they're not manning it right now, but just go to cpdvest.com, and there's an opportunity to donate right there. It's right under a nice, pretty picture of David Hochberg making a strange face at the camera. So if you want to see that, that's a good reason to go to cpdvest.com as well, to see our friend David Hochberg in a nice stare at the camera. And then you can donate right underneath it. It's easy to do, and it is certainly helpful. And you can make it a one-time donation. You can make it recurring. And it's always great that Alderman O'Shea and so many people come together for this cause. And hopefully one day we can work that into the budget. I know budgets are tight. Don't get me wrong. I understand that. But if there's one thing police officers I don't think should have to worry about is paying for their own replacement vests. But I'll get off the soapbox. I'm glad there's people helping out with that. Okay. Our guest today, Don McGarra from McCreadyLaw.com. McCready Law is the phone number, 773-917-1276. Don, you do a lot of different things in personal injury or product liability, medical malpractice. And we had a question from a texter asking about what are the statutes of limitations for a medical malpractice suit. Does it depend, or how does it work?
It does. It depends on whether or not you're an adult, whether or not you're a minor, and there's a thing called the discovery rule. The general statute of limitations is 2 years. You need to file 2 years from the date of the alleged negligent act. But there's also a discovery rule in Illinois, whereas if you did not know or have reason to know that there was the potential for malpractice, you've got 2 years from the date when you knew or should have known. But In addition to that, there's what's called a statute of repose on the back end, meaning you can't go farther than 4 years. So if there's a discovery rule, you can go beyond 2 years. Generally, it's 2 years, and with children, it's longer. So but if you want to be on the safe side, and we always try to err on the safe side, you look at a 2-year period of time.
Okay. So, you've dealt with a lot of major fire cases. Is this about products or homes or both?
Well, I mean, the firm is right now several fire cases, and I've handled some huge property subrogation losses, and so those are fascinating cases because of the forensics and the experts that are involved. You typically bring out someone called a cause and origin expert. Those are people that are trained. A lot of them are ex-firefighters, or they've been in the firefighting world, or they're currently working as a private consultant for fire departments around the United States. And what they do is they look at the physical evidence, and you want to find out where the fire started. There's a number of things that these experts look for, and then you see where the wear patterns are. They actually do bring in dogs as well to look for accelerants. And so you've got to rule out an intentional fire. But there was a case I had a few years ago. It's a huge property loss, and there were four potential parties. There was the owner of the product, which was a multimillion-dollar, huge industrial piece of equipment. There was the manufacturer. And then there were the two service companies. So the day after the fire, there were probably 20 people out there. I was out there in a group of five. I had a mechanical engineer, an electrical engineer, a cause and origin expert, and another person who was assisting the cause and origin expert. And we were trying to do the same thing everyone was doing, trying to figure out what happened and why. And so we started looking at the evidence, and it was fascinating. Because what had happened is at the bottom of this machine, there's a conveyor belt. What the conveyor belt was about 3 or 4 inches thick and about 4 feet wide. And when it was operating, you wouldn't want to be around it.
No,
because
yes.
It could cause a very serious injury or death. But what had happened is it was out of alignment. And so it was creating friction, which creates heat. When it creates heat, and it did it for an extended period of time, that's when it started the fire.
So then I imagine you've got to figure out, is it out of alignment because it wasn't maintained properly? Is it out of alignment because it was designed improperly? Was it out of alignment because of a mistake made on the floor or something like that?
Absolutely. Right? And whether or not, there's several possibilities. So if it's not being maintained properly, in theory, that would be the responsibility of the owner or whoever the owner is hired to come out and maintain it properly. And that's one of the companies that was there. And then if there is an issue with the design, that would go back to the manufacturer. So a lot of the cases, when you're talking about millions of dollars, the property subrogation people want to know, as they should, what happened and why.
Yeah.
And so there was one of the other groups, and the case settled. After a while, but the group I represented was the manufacturer, I shouldn't say the group, the potential defendant. And everyone was pointing the finger at us in the beginning, but I had some really good experts, and by the end, we were the least, we paid the smallest amount, and it was more of a cost of defense type thing. But the evidence, once everyone got the evidence and the best experts were involved, everyone pretty much knew what happened.
Yeah, so. I imagine that's an interesting part of the job is that obviously you have a plaintiff who claims something and you want to figure out who's at fault.
Right.
But you've got to follow the evidence where it leads. I mean, you can't just find the expert who's going to tell you exactly what you want them to say. I mean, if wishing made it so. But, when that comes to trial or if that the other team has lawyers too to counter that stuff. So you've got to be... You got to kind of follow the evidence where it goes, don't you?
Yep, absolutely. And that's part of our job, and that's part of the job of any lawyer. And one of the things we get a high level of satisfaction, I'm talking about everyone in our firm, is when we're able to help people really who are in need. But the other thing is, if you have someone who comes to the firm and they have a circumstance where you don't believe a case exists, the worst thing in the world is to file a case and then go litigate it and go try it. You take all this time and money, but the biggest issue is someone's already gone through a very tragic circumstance, and at the end of a two-year period, you go through a trial and a jury tells you you have no case, that makes a very difficult circumstance that much worse.
Yeah.
So that's something that, you know, this is all about risk, and it's all about understanding what these cases are all about.
So. Who should be calling the firm? Is it, like, I mean, paint a picture, because, I mean, I think a lot of us, you know, listening to this, obviously we're talking about big companies, industrial products, these sorts of things. To the average listener who, what is it, did they experience a car accident or something faulty? You talk about medical malpractice. I think a lot of people may not be aware that there is some recourse for some of the things that they've been through.
Well, I mean, if someone's gone through a medical situation and the result is not what they anticipated it to be, and they believe something was done or something should have been done that wasn't done, in other words, something was done that was wrong, they should give us a call.
Yeah.
Because then what will happen is we'll get the records. We have people that we work with all the time that are experts. We'll figure it out and see. And if, in fact, there is a basis for a case, we'll help them out. We'll proceed with that. Same thing with a product situation. That situation I was describing to you in terms of I've seen a number of cases that involve, you know, failed brakes, and you got to figure out why that's going on. That's what we do. We bring in the right people to make that happen. I've had car cases where tires have blown out. Same algorithm. You know, you want to see whether or not there's a problem with the manufacturer of the tire, whether or not whoever mounted it did it properly, whether or not the tire itself had a problem, things like that.
Are they usually one-time traumatic events with the product, or can they be repetitive things with a product you've used? I'm just trying to think of, like, in the pharmaceutical world or in, you know, the stuff we spray on our grass. Is that an area you guys cover, or is it more like these one-time?
No, we've handled cases like that, and I've handled cases involving, I can't remember the name of the product, but some of the chemicals that are used on some of the grasses, and people are exposed to that for an extended period of time. That's when you get into some interesting questions about when does the statute of limitations actually run. And then that comes down, it becomes what we call a question of fact. You have to talk to the doctors. When did the exposure start, and when did the person actually start getting sick from it? You know, in other words, having a reaction. So things are not always black and white, and that's all the more reason to give us a call, because we can help you figure that out.
That's what I was just going to say, because... Look, I say there's no dumb questions, although I often feel dumb asking some of the questions on this show. But I think a lot of people out there are hesitant. Look, I think that as litigious as our country is painted to be sometimes, I think most people don't want to go through it if they don't have to. I think most people say, I don't want, then it's not me. This is okay. I'll just battle through this, or, you know, that happened to my dad. But, you know, come on. I'm not going to sue anyone. Call and ask.
Sure.
If it's weighing on your mind, even an answer from your law firm of, you know, I don't really think we have a case here, that can be a form of closure, too, to people.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And then there's other circumstances where, you know, we may not be able to help someone out, but we have the resources in terms of other lawyers in the Chicagoland community or around the United States, for that matter. We handle cases all over the United States, and we can help people find other answers.
Got a few of the same questions, similar ones, on the text line about assisted living facilities. Do you guys do anything with that, where people would feel like they've been had parents that have been neglected in those situations?
Yes, we handle those cases, and then there are statutes that you know apply to those circumstances. Some of those cases are very, very sad, because some people in those facilities are, in fact, neglected. And there's no oversight. There's no video. There was a case that I had about a year ago where the family had actually put a video in the room for security reasons, and it caught a very bad negligent act. It wasn't an intentional act, but it was negligent. And I tell people now in a medical circumstance, if you've got a loved one in a hospital, I recommend to people that they have someone in the room, not because I'm being anti-medicine. I'm not.
No,
it's just
of course.
The people in the medical arena right now, for a variety of reasons, are overworked.
Yes.
And so you know your family members. And if someone is in the room with them and they start to have some sort of reaction, you can be there to help. That's the reason why I recommend that. But that's some of the cases coming out of the assisted living facilities are very, very sad.
We often say be your best advocate. That's sometimes hard to do when you're chatting with a doctor who knows a lot more about something than you do. Having someone with you that can be that advocate for you, absolutely, that can be a little bit of your own backbone, can be really helpful too.
Right. Well, and part of my advice comes from a personal experience that turned out well. My mother had a knee replacement, and we made a decision that we were going to have someone in there with her the whole time. My mother-in-law was there. She left. I came in. My mom started having some weird, symptoms, and she was reacting to one of the medications. No one had done anything wrong. It was just her physiology.
Yeah.
But I ran down the end of the hall, and this one nurse there, orthopedic nurse, who was good, but she had the whole floor.
She was overworked.
She was really busy. And once I got down and got her, she got a senior fellow. They came in and took care of my mom right away. But had I not been there, there might have been, some significant adverse consequences.
The number is 773-917-1276. If you're sitting around, you're driving around, you're going, this has bugged me that this thing happened. And maybe there was someone at fault. Maybe there is some justice to be done. I'm just curious. Call that number, 773-917-1276. You'll either get an answer of yes, and maybe we'll tackle this, or we don't think that that's an issue. Okay, well, then you can close that part of your brain and not worry about it. I think that's often comforting to people. McCready mm-hmm. Law is the name of the company, the firm, McCreadyLaw.com. And we got a few more minutes left with Don. We'll do that after this break on WGN. 152 on WGN. It's been fun to pick the brain of Don McGarrah, who... 38 states you've
yes,
cases? That's
I
a
have.
Lot of that's a lot of them. I think there's 50, so what? That's 12 left. Which one's next? What do you got to do on the checklist? Why haven't you gotten all 50, Don?
I don't know, but I can next year I'm going to be working in Florida, South Carolina, and Mississippi during January.
Alaska? Oh, yeah. Oh, there you go. You're going to
I have been in Alaska.
Schedule.
I've handled cases in Alaska and Hawaii. And,
Well, now I got to figure out, we'll do it off the air, which ones are left on the list, and I'll see what I can do for you. We have listeners everywhere, WGNradio.com, and your smart devices, of course, listen worldwide. Okay, Nancy, you're on WGN. How are you doing today?
I'm good. How are you?
Doing great. You got a question?
Yes, I do. My mom passed away almost 2 years ago from mouth cancer.
I'm sorry, Nancy.
And thank you. I appreciate that. It's been tough. She was 92, so yes, she was old. But my question is, we took her to numerous dentists, and no one could diagnose. They all said she just had a bad infection. We finally took her, or I did, to an ear, nose, and throat doctor, and he took a biopsy and said she had mouth cancer. So do I have a case?
That's interesting. And Don, obviously you can't answer specifically, but like what would be follow-ups that you would do if you got a call from Nancy on that sort of question?
Well, I would talk to Nancy. Nancy, by the way, I'm sorry to hear about the passing of your mother. But
Thank you.
I would take some detailed information from you. We would find the names of all of your medical care providers. We would have you execute what's called a HIPAA-compliant medical records authorization. We would get the records. We would review the records. And when I say we, people in our firm, and then I would use some of our medical consultants and dental consultants to take a look at it to see whether or not there was a basis for a case. And I think that's the algorithm that any reasonable and responsible person would suggest to you if you wanted to pursue it.
And the records would show maybe, because I've had them spray a thing in my mouth at the dentist, if I'm not mistaken, and it actually texts and it's like bioluminescent reflecting that would show, and that it's been a while since they did this, but to show if there was any mouth cancer or something. I'm not saying this happened or didn't happen, but that would be something. Did they do all the proper tests that are available to at their disposal to do?
Well, yes, or in the alternative, did they refer your mother back to the right people to do those tests? If you went to a ear, nose, and throat person, that's an otolaryngologist, their head and neck surgeon, they have a higher level of training than a dentist would have. But there's certain circumstances that go beyond dental care, and that's when they should refer someone out either to an oral surgeon or to an ENT specialist. And those are all the issues that are assessed. I can't tell you yes, no, or maybe until we see the records.
But that's like a call that someone should make to the office. That
absolutely.
That wouldn't be absurd at all for someone to call.
No, no, that's why we do that every day.
773-917-1276. Nancy, I got to run, but thank you for calling today, okay? I'm
okay,
sorry.
Okay, that's fine. Okay, yep. thank you.
Thank you, Nancy. Take care.
I mean, and I think that that happens a lot. You mentioned your mom passed at 94.
Yes.
Both my grandparents lived in their 90s. Two of them did. And you think, well, you know, what things happen, right, when you're in your 90s. No, there still can be medical malpractice against
absolutely.
A 90-year-old.
Absolutely.
And let the process play out in court in terms of the damages and that. But just because someone's a little older doesn't mean that they aren't entitled to the same care as anybody else.
They're entitled to the same care and the same justice.
Now we got about 30 seconds left. Make the elevator pitch for McCready Law, what you guys do and why people should call you.
Well, McCready Law has got an extraordinary culture in terms of the way in which our clients, we interact with our clients, and also internally. That's why the firm has experienced explosive growth. We're now up to 175 people total. We're in 5 states. We're going to go into 2 more states. We really work with people with a high level of care, and the culture of the firm is extraordinary.
Good teamwork there?
Yeah, absolutely. It's an esprit de corps.
Yeah, and you know a lot about teams, having been a former rugby player.
Indeed.
Got to trust your fellow men out there on the field in rugby.
Absolutely, and I've been able to do that all around the country as well, and including being able to play with some United States Navy servicemen.
What's harder, a scrum or a trial?
Well, I played in the backfield. If I got under a scrum, I got out of there as fast as I could because I'm a small guy, and I was fast, so I was able to get away from
you could
the scrum.
Run away.
Yeah, yeah, early and often, man.
Oh, I love that. Don, it was great to meet you. I hope we chat again soon.
Nice meeting you.
Yeah,
Thank you.
Of course, the number one more time, 773-917-1276. 773-917-1276. That's McCreadyLaw.com. Always great to meet some new folks here on Let's Get Legal. Always great to welcome in our old friends. That'll be Mike Leonard, who's going to join us in the 2 o'clock hour. Loves taking your questions. 312-981-7200. We'll chat a little bit about the tariff decision yesterday by the Supreme Court, about the social media cases and addiction that kids may or may not face, and are these companies liable for it? We'll do it all after this and news from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom on WGN.